We kick off hour number three of Three and Out, driven by Toyota Knoxville. Appreciate you guys joining us. I'm Nate Hodges alongside Houston Kress and Davey Hudson. Donovan on Twitter, not going to like this segment. If you're just now tuning in, Donovan, just go back to hour one of the podcast. If you want all Tennessee talk and no Patriots Super Bowl talk, sorry, got to get to it.
We will get back to basketball shortly. But, Patriots.
Can I make a confession? I will be more.
No.
Okay. What would you like to talk about then?
I'm just kidding, of course.
No. I will be more fervently pulling for a team now in the Super Bowl and probably
fair.
More engaged to the actual game now because I, like many of you, hate the Patriots. So now I'm a big Rams fan for the Super Bowl. Whereas if it was Rams, Chiefs, I would have been happier last night watching the Chiefs win that game.
But not as invested in the Super Bowl.
But in the Super Bowl, I'd still watch every play, but I wouldn't be on the edge of my seat the way I will be now. Now I'm going to be screaming at the TV if Todd Gurley keeps dropping passes over the middle as the checkdown.
Fair enough.
I would have loved to have had a rematch between the Chiefs and the Rams just because that was the best game of the entire regular season.
Good point, Davey. Yep, I didn't think about that. But I do think now that you have villain and good guy for a lot of people.
And it's the first time we've seen that matchup this year.
Okay.
So yeah. That's good. And I think it'll probably be similar. I think it'll be a high-scoring, back-and-forth type of game. It's the young magician genius against the old evil, you know, emperor. So there's a lot of storylines here. It's still young quarterback versus legend. It's still the opportunity for a passing of the torch if the mm-hmm. Rams are able to get the win. And it's a really good opportunity for Sean McVay to cement himself as a legitimate, you know, head coach as opposed to just some offensive genius. I think it'll be a great game. The Patriots I've seen are slight favorites early, but I think it'll be a fantastic game regardless. I'm not saying it'll be exactly like Chiefs-Rams, but I think it'll be similar. I think it'll be high scoring. I think it'll be into the fourth quarter. And I think one of these two coaches is going to make a call that changes everything, and we'll see what happens. I'm excited for it, though. I'm excited to root for the Rams. Good for L.A.
Been a long time coming for the Los Angeles to, you know.
Yeah.
Did you see the video of the folks in the bar in Los Angeles? Yeah. And they were just like, man, the passion. I can't believe the NFL waited this long to move two teams to the Los Angeles area. And it's just the fans are watching the game. And as the Rams ultimately win off the field goal, like, people just kind of, yay. Like, there was no, like, the bars just going crazy. There's not just people shouting.
Apparently, there was one video where someone said, is that the end? like they weren't sure that's how the game ended. They're like, is it over? And then
gross. That's awful.
It's bad.
There were the
it's
congratulatory bad. Tweets for St. Louis. That were cringeworthy. It was like, really feel great for St. Louis to be finally back in the Super Bowl again. Ouch.
Mercy.
I can't imagine that. I have one buddy who was a St. Louis Rams fan. I need to check on him and see like what his
He's
emotions
back now.
Are like.
He's back.
But I mean, can you imagine? I don't know how many there were or still are. But if you pulled for the St. Louis Rams the way you pull for the Tennessee Volunteers, and then they leave you, like, can you imagine Tennessee, the announcement today, you know, interim chancellor president has decided that the University of Tennessee is now moving to Memphis, and they're
like, that's not even a good example. It'd be like,
oh, I know, but
Birmingham or something. Huntsville. Valdosta, the Valdosta Vols. That's what it would feel like. They're so far away, different state. I mean, everything changes.
Or Atlanta. It'd be like Atlanta. Like
no,
because
that's close, man. St. Louis to L.A. is not a four-hour drive.
This is enemy territory.
This is all the way across the country. Like, complete relocation, rebrand.
I mean, do you brutal. Just keep pulling for them? Like,
I mean, you don't have a team if you just stop.
It's true. Can't even. I don't know. That's sad. Atlanta is the home of the Super Bowl. If you're wondering that, it'll be Patriots and Rams from the Mercedes-Benz, whatever they call it.
Superdome?
No, that's
just,
New Orleans.
Just Dome? Mercedes-Benz?
Stadium?
Yeah, I think that's right.
There you go.
Mercedes-Benz Stadium.
Yeah. And the roof now, the roof can now open and close there?
Yeah, they got that fixed.
Took them a year and a half.
They found there was a loose wire in the duct.
The extension cord from the airplane.
They took care of it. They got it.
I have a feeling it'll be closed. Just a gut feeling. You know, February
good
weather.
Good hunch by you.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I don't want to go too far out on a limb here, but feel confident with that assumption.
Well, Super Bowl set. Neat.
Good. Evil.
Whatever.
Was Tom Brady's first Super Bowl against the Rams?
Yes.
Okay.
And they were the huge underdog, and there was no chance that they were going to win. And the defense somehow shut down the greatest show on turf, and the rest is history.
Yeah. Neat.
And that's what, like, the first half of yesterday's Chiefs-Patriots game is why you can't, like, listen. I get all the Tom Brady arguments for quarterback and how great he is, and they're all legitimate on some level. But his run is still not as great if he's not paired with Bill Belichick. Like, it's
no,
both.
Of course not.
And the fact that they shut down the Chiefs offense for an entire half the way they did, I mean, it. And Andy Reid, for all the jokes you make, I mean, dude is, like, they do come up with really smart offensive stuff. Mm-hmm. I mean, the one screenplay they ran for the touchdown late, like there wasn't a Patriots player on that half of the field when Mahomes threw the ball back across. Every player was on the wrong half of the football field. I mean, that's some pretty genius offensive stuff from Andy Reid, and in the first half it just didn't matter. Like, Belichick completely punked him.
And it was enough. Just enough.
Just enough. It's pretty wild.
Just enough to get to that coin flip and win the game.
Well, Houston, you're the most conspiracy theorist guy on the program. What do you think? Do you think
No.
You think the no pass interference wanted is the LA TV market was what the NFL was going for there, and then they wanted the Pats back. Anything with that? It's all fixed. It's wrestling.
I mean, maybe.
Did you see the wrestling photoshopped video from somewhere the referee actually picks up the guy who's winning the wrestling match, body slams him, and then pulls the other guy and lays him on top of him.
Gives him
good.
The count.
Yeah. Yeah, it's pretty good.
That played well on the radio, I'm sure.
Some people saw it. They know what I'm talking about.
I don't know. I don't think I was watching either game close enough to call a conspiracy or not, but I understand today that there are quite a few angry people saying they just wanted the TV markets because they're trying to make up for lost revenue last year and getting, you know, the Northeast and getting L.A. will play. But I'm like, it's the Super Bowl, man. Like, everyone's going to watch it anyway. Who really cares?
There were some calls that went against the Patriots late in regulation. And that was
maybe they just planned for overtime in both games.
Maybe that's it.
Just wanted a little extra tee time. Little extra revenue to come in. Get to play a couple bonus spots.
First time that's ever happened in both games. Let's go to the phone lines, 865-546-8200. We got T-Carp up first. What's up, T?
Hey, fellas. Hope everybody is well and
speaking of tea
warm.
Time.
Yeah, exactly.
staying warm today, not an option.
Challenge.
You just got to deal with it.
Dude, it was – you get out of there and it's – my hands are just – oh. But, man, what fun football we had last night. And, you know, the drama of the NFL, there's nothing like it. It was really a whole lot of fun. I stayed glued to my TV, and it was just very, very, very good last night. And speaking of, like, really good, Tony Romo was phenomenal.
Oh,
was
my
he
gosh.
Not, guys?
We haven't even talked about him. He's so good.
I mean, is he the John Madden of our time? Like,
yeah,
is he better than John Madden?
Yes,
was.
I mean, in a different way, but yeah. For me, as I watch the game, I prefer Romo.
Same. I mean, he's sitting there diagnosing, like, they've got to do this. This is what he's going to do, and he does. He called like 6 or 7 plays, like before they happened.
Oh, at least. At one point, the Patriots checked out of a play, and he's like, oh, this normally means they run jet motion and then run it to the right. Jet motion, they ran it to the right. Yeah. I'm just like, man, Tony, like, what? He needs to be, like, CBS needs to be very careful, or somebody is going to just steal him to come be a coach very quickly.
Clay Travis actually tweeted out earlier this morning that Tony Romo has 1 year left on his CBS contract, and he was just kind of pointing out, like, how much money did he make last night after such a good game?
I don't think I've ever watched
He can name his number.
I don't think I've ever watched the game and said the commentator is just absolutely the best thing. Just made my experience so much better. So, I really didn't like Tony
Just Monday
Romo,
Night Football
like
every Monday.
When he played. And I just think he's a phenomenal announcer. But one thing quickly about the game, it really sucked to see Eric Berry not get super beat, but just get out-athleted. You know what I mean?
He got bullied around a little bit by Gronk. But I mean, that's kind of what Gronk does.
Gronk's what, 6'7", 6'8"? You know,
he's a monster.
Absolute monster of a man. And
Barry's still coming off of the heel injury, the Achilles. I mean, Barry's not 100%. Admirable for him to go out there and give it his best shot, but I don't know that was the best option for the Chiefs. I mean, there's a reason he didn't play last week.
Yeah, that's true. The only other thing I've got before I hop off here is with the overtime rules, all we need to do is just give the other team a possession.
That's
you know,
it. That's all we're saying, T-Carp. Just give them the ball back with a chance to match. Or, I mean, obviously with a field goal, they get that anyway. But if it's a touchdown, give them a chance to go down and match and then make the decision to extend the game or go for two. Or, you could make them have to go for two if you wanted to in that situation. Hey, we're going to change the rules. You're going to get a possession after a touchdown now, but you have to go for two because we don't want this thing to drag on till midnight in the playoffs, I'm talking.
I mean, that's fine with me. You got to make the coin flip matter. So going for two, you know, would make that matter. But you don't want to put so much emphasis on the coin flip because, you know, whoever gets the ball first usually has a 70 to 80% chance of going down scoring because the defense has played all game. I mean, the chances of winning, I don't know the exact statistics, but, I mean, just a phenomenal chance of winning if you win the coin toss. So
in a game guys, like that, absolutely.
Yeah. Guys, thank you so much. Y'all have a good one.
Thanks, T-Carp.
Thanks for the call, T-Carp. Yeah, the rules haven't kept up pace with the way the game's changed. The offenses have such a big advantage that, like, scoring isn't – it used to be, oh, it's sudden death. First team to score wins. This will be awesome. Well, that's when teams just didn't score nearly as much and as easily as they do now. And the rulemaking is just, like, 20 years behind the curve on all this stuff.
Like, the coin flip, in my opinion, I mean – it shouldn't have an impact on the game, like what comes next, I guess, if this makes sense. Because if you win the coin flip to start the game, you get to choose, right? Defer, receive. But then the opposite also happens.
Right.
You're just choosing which one happens first. This is not that. A coin flip should not be what decides a game. And in games like this, it is. Like, why would we play 60 minutes to only have a flip of the coin decide your winner? Like, let the play on the field decide the winner and let what comes after the coin flip be equal for both teams. The only thing that changes is the coin flip decides who gets to go first based on their decision. It shouldn't mean if I win the coin flip, the other team doesn't get a chance to win the game. Like, that just does not make sense. That's not fair in the definition of what we're trying to do here, right, in these football games.
I agree with everything we're saying. I feel we do have to point out that the Saints did win the coin toss in overtime, and they lost last night. So.
No, I mean, it's not a guarantee that you're going to win, but I'm just saying it should be even what plays out after the coin flip.
Like, there shouldn't be a statistical significant difference in winning or losing the coin
toss. A 50-50 coin flip. Like, that doesn't make sense, right? Like, it should play out. And if you give the team the opportunity to match, that's what you're doing.
We'll come back with more. I have a couple more thoughts on Romo and the broadcast stuff, and then we're going to flip back to Tennessee basketball this hour as well. So stick around. It's 3 and Out driven by Toyota Knoxville. Let's go. This segment brought to you by Einstein Bros Bagels Coffee, the official coffee of 3 and Out. Pick you up some at your local Einstein Bros Bagels. Coffee and bagels just go together. So get it together with Einstein Bros Bagels and their coffee, the official coffee of 3 and Out.
Seth Davis of The Athletic has released his top 25. Vols sit at number one. So there's one AP vote that the Vols get for number one.
Nice.
Feels good.
Well, I had one more Tony Romo thought before we're going to get back to basketball to wrap up the hour today. Big day for Tennessee as the polls will come out around noon, around lunchish time. Romo, you know, T-Carp asked, is he like how do you stack him up? How do you grade him as a color commentator? This isn't like somebody that comes into an industry and does the job better than everyone else. This is like somebody coming into an industry and completely doing the job differently. Like, I don't even know. So, like, Nick Saban's the best college football coach right now. Tony Romo is doing to color commentating more than Nick Saban's doing to college football. Nick Saban doesn't run defensive concepts that have never been seen before.
No, he's doing the same thing better.
Right.
This is just totally different.
Totally different.
This is changing the game.
He asked about John Madden. It doesn't matter. Stack up all your color commentators. It might be more like, okay, so like there's really old World Series calls where when they used to like play the games in the day and all this kind of stuff, right? Where there was no such thing really as color commentating. It was the thought process was the viewer on television only wants you to say what's happening, and even on radio it's like that. They only want you to say exactly what's happening. Don't get off into the weeds on anything because that might create bias or be a distraction or what. So they just describe the action. And then at some point somebody said, wait a minute, we can actually add to the broadcast by having an expert that knows more than the audience and can provide insight. And then that became, well, who knows more than former players? And then, of course, lots of guys are better or worse than others. But that's the whole game. What Tony Romo's doing is changing the entire industry. Mm-hmm. Like, predicting plays was never a thing that guys would even think to do in the past. I mean, now they talk about tendencies and game planning and strategy and scheme. But, like, saying, oh, it's an alert, they're going to run motion and probably run to the right here. I mean, that's something that Tony Romo either heard his defensive coaches say about the Patriots when he was a player or has watched so much film himself between
right.
then and now that, like, he's studying the game still like he's a player.
That's what I think it is. I think he's studying his, you know, teams for his matchup the way he would study as if he were a quarterback. And obviously you don't have to spend as much time on, you know, the defensive side of the ball, so he's able to now take – those hours and hours of film study that he would put forward as a player and divide them up and look at offenses, look at defenses. And even in that divided time, he's still able to give you so much more than anyone else right now. And it's one of those things, you mentioned he's kind of changing it because it's so new. It's one of those things I don't know that people knew they liked it. At first, I think a lot of people were kind of like, oh, it seems kind of like he's bragging a little bit or like he's – you know, mm-hmm. he's just trying to show off, and now, you know, 2 years into it, people are like, man, this is just talent. This is skill to be able to see this and recognize it. This is work being put in, and I can't imagine watching a game through his eyes where, based on a call, a shift, a signal, he now knows what's coming before it happens without having a headset on. Like, that's remarkable to me.
It's like
he's giving us a peek behind that curtain.
It's kind of like he's the fan-run radio of broadcast analysis.
Changing the whole game.
Changing everything.
Like, don't just try and do the same thing better.
Yeah.
But, like, just take some of the industry standards and just say, you know what, that's outdated. You don't have to do it that way anymore.
Mm-hmm.
Let's just change it. Let's just do it. Let's just make it better. Let's just change the whole thing for the better. And for me, predicting the plays is not the most valuable thing he does, like, for me as a watcher. It might be for some other people, and that's fine. But I like when they get in a certain situation, and he goes through, like, what the quarterback and the the coach's like plan needs to be before. Like, okay, there's 32 seconds left, or there was 23 seconds left for Mahomes with no timeouts. Like, okay, there's still enough time to complete a ball over the middle and run up and spike it, but it must be a big chunk play. You can't dump it off over the middle. I mean, how many times do we see quarterbacks do that and lose games or give them, you know, they end up having to throw a Hail Mary into the end zone instead of like Mahomes did and taking the shot down the hash and getting into field goal range. And, I mean, everything Tony Romo says isn't stuff you don't already know, but he goes through it in a way that is like, yeah, that makes sense. And then he adds things to it.
Well, and it's amazing to me how many times he'll be recommending something or suggesting something, kind of laying out your options. Okay, they need to complete this and then take a timeout unless it's out of bounds, so on and so forth. There was a play like that last night. The Chiefs completed a ball, and he's like, all right, run up and clock it or call a timeout. And they were running up to clock it, and then they called the timeout. And it's like, wow, if you had Tony's brain and you were thinking that quick and you knew you wanted to call the timeout, you could have saved 5 or 6 seconds on the clock, and maybe that does give them another shot at the end zone at the end. It's wild because he's so far ahead of the people on the sideline being paid millions and millions of dollars to make those decisions for that specific team, and he's just offering it up as free information and beating those guys to the correct decision. It's remarkable.
He even beat Twitter to the ball don't lie joke last night.
He did.
It's true.
One in Stripes says, I think it's his own recognition of defenses and what he knows offenses do to counter those defensive alignments.
Yeah.
It's why he was a great player too. Well, and that was, I mean, like he was predicting what the Patriots were going to do based off of what the Chiefs were doing on defense, which that's different. I know a lot of people are like, well, Romo should just be a defensive coordinator. Well, but that's not the point. Like if you can't – he was picking what the Patriots were going to do because he already knew what the Chiefs were doing on defense. So there's no way to then –
But he also then knew call another specific defense. Tendencies for the Patriots.
Right.
You know.
But that's what I'm saying.
Oh, yeah, when the Patriots see this, they normally check out of it, run motion, and run to the right. And then they did. But it's because he saw what the Chiefs did.
There was a whole article read, I think it was through The Athletic about sign stealing in college football, like the plays and stuff. And the sign stealing expert they had who talked anonymously about it is like, the problem is not knowing what they're going to do. It's trying to communicate it quick enough so that it matters. And that's the thing. Like, the Chiefs even knew that when they bracket Gronk that – they're going to stack Edelman and get him one-on-one over the middle. The Chiefs' secondary players were even pointing out what was going to happen. They still couldn't stop it. And just like Romo knew that once they tried to help out over the middle with Edelman, that now it's going to be Gronk and Barry singled up and that's where they were going to look. And twice, you know, once on the fade and once on the slant, Gronk beat Barry. And at some point, I remember the Ravens beating the Patriots in like a regular season game a long time ago. And the way they did it is they ultimately just were able to beat the Patriots receivers in man coverage. Like the corners for the Ravens were so physical and so good that they held up long enough that the pass rush got to Brady and the Ravens won. And really, if you're an offensive team, that's the best thing you can do is just get to those matchups to where it give your guys much space to win the one-on-one matchup. And Brady's just a pro at finding that matchup over and over. And Romo, watching both teams, can just point it out before the play. But he's doing it a completely different way. Like, other commentators have never even tried to do it that way, I guess is my point.
Yeah.
He's changed the whole thing.
That's the thing, you know, is he better than Madden? I mean, that's like comparing two completely different things.
Right.
You know what I'm saying?
Madden might could have done some of that, but his producer's not even asking him to try.
Right.
You know? So,
it's like I loved John Madden for what he did, but he didn't do this. And for me, I appreciate this more. I think this takes more skill. I think it takes more effort, more work. And I appreciate that in a game that, I don't know, it obviously a lot of people watch it, but I don't know that a lot of people truly understand it. And Tony, again, invite you behind the curtain to not only watch football, to not only talk about, wow, look at this great block here, but also the schematic tactical stuff that goes into decision making on both sides of the ball. And he just does it, like you said, in a way that no one has done before.
So the next question is, will other networks try? I mean,
they're trying.
ESPN thought they could just get Romo's teammate and it would be the same, and it's just not. Like, I love Jason Witten, obviously, as a player, a person. I mean, he's been a phenomenal everything for Tennessee and the Cowboys, but he didn't have that all built in, ready to go like Romo. Will networks now try and find the next Romo and then explain to them exactly what they want and how to be like more like that, even if the personality is different? That'll be kind of the next layer to the whole thing. But yeah, I mean, the big winners yesterday behind the two teams that won, Tony Romo killed it, and last year of his contract, he'll be re-upping for a big number, I would assume.
He and Pat Mahomes going to be battling for that top spot.
There you go. We'll come back with more. We're going to shift back to basketball as we move through hour three here of the program. Polls come out at noon. We'll bounce around some as well. Stick with us right here. It's 3 and Out, driven by Toyota Knoxville. Down and out, losing grass. Although I am black and brown, some problems got me pessimistic. Brothers and sisters keep messing up. Why does it have to be so damn tough? I don't know. 3 and Out rolls along here. Hour number three. The Super Bowl is set. It's Patriots, it's Rams, for better or for worse. Two overtime games yesterday. First time that's ever happened. AFC, NFC games, both championship games, both going to OT. And for the other big topic we hit on today was the Tennessee win over Alabama, 71-68. You said something earlier in the show, Houston, that made me think, like, you're right, Tennessee's goal defensively, I mean, straight from Rick Barnes, is that they want to hold teams to 65 points or less.
They almost did that.
And they were right there. I guess, if Alabama shoots a little bit better from the free throw line, maybe that's not quite so close. So that's a thing. We'll see if Tennessee can play a cleaner, more complete game against Vanderbilt. I don't know how much that will teach you. Even if they win that game by, 10 to 20 points, it's still another just kind of take care of your business game.
Mm-hmm.
But there is something valuable in just getting the job done. The other thing that happened at the basketball game was the introduction of Tennessee's two new football coaches.
Boy, that was pretty neat. Chaney gets the standing ovation, and then the video for T. Martin starts with the "I'm coming home, dun, 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 tell the world." And then, holy Toledo, when he walked out on that court, people were texting me and said they were crying. There were a lot of tears.
Really?
It felt good. It was like family, man.
Wow.
Family coming home. Perfect video choice. And then the place just went to, level 11. Good to have him back in the fold as Charles Kelly, officially now, gone. He has taken a job at Alabama, allowing T. Martin an official spot on the staff now as a coach. His duties will be named, I think, later this week officially. But no, that was a cool moment. Had Tony White out on the floor, had Chaney, had T. A lot of energy in the building in Thompson Bowling on Saturday. Another sellout crowd. This one looked like every seat was full, or at least very, very close to it. I don't know, man. All the positive vibes. I don't know what to do with myself. I was telling Russell when I got here, there was about 6 minutes left in the game. Told him I don't know that I've ever done a voluntary reaction after Tennessee's won something. So I was nervous. And then the Vols hang on, as you mentioned, get the W. Could move to number one in the country here in just a couple hours officially when the AP and coaches poll comes out. A lot of positivity going on right now. A lot of reasons to feel good. A lot of happy vibes. And it's been a while since you've had, I guess, this much go right in such a short amount of time. But so far, January 2019, off to a hell of a start. Not to mention the fact that you're getting a lot of good news on the recruiting trail also, both for a few remaining targets in the 2019 class and 2020, 2021. You had some juniors and sophomores on campus recently, and all the reports are very, very good. That the message now is we're getting Tennessee back where they're supposed to be. Mm-hmm. Get on or get out. And it sounds like a lot of guys are really kind of digging the vibe and the message. They showed Jeremy Pruitt a couple times on TV over there, hobnobbing with the recruits. A lot of momentum as they head into this final visit weekend. Haven't seen the official visitor list for this weekend, but I'm sure it's going to be pretty stacked. And then obviously signing day next Wednesday. Is that right? Or is it next Wednesday?
Next
Wednesday, excuse me.
Yeah, it's always the first Wednesday in February, so it'll be the 6th. It's kind of a little late.
Late first Wednesday.
Yeah, it's almost as late as it can be. I mean, things are looking up, and I've noticed, some of the other names that these other schools are hiring, not exactly blowing me away. You know, I mean, the Georgias and Alabamas of the world still just kind of putting together staffs with either guys that were, I mean, like Sarkisian was a guy we talked about here. They're adding guys that I haven't heard of to do some other stuff, different places. We did finally get the Charles Kelly news that he is leaving the football staff, and that is what prompted the official announcement from Tennessee to announce T. Martin. They still did not in their release say what position he's going to coach, but I guess we'll just have to kind of see how it all plays out.
Yeah, I said earlier they're announcing that later this week. I don't know if you maybe missed that. Maybe you're reading something.
Yeah, sorry.
Charlton Warren announces the defensive back coach at Georgia.
Well, that's where I was kind of heading, like Sal Cenceri. I mean, like going back to Alabama, did that get finalized?
You know, it's really funny to me that the Georgia fans are saying things like, man, Charlton Warren knew that they were building something special at Florida, and he still wanted to leave to come to Georgia. Wow. And I just said, yeah, that's what Chaney did too. You idiots. It's amazing how you spin it one way or the other, depending on who your team is.
Of course.
But, yeah, stealing Charlton Warren from Florida means everything's fine at Georgia and Florida's crumbling, but stealing your OC meant nothing because you didn't want him anyway. It's just hilarious. Georgia fans right now, they're trembling in their little space boots. They're terrified. Mm. Charlton Warren, he's whatever. He's fine. He's good, I guess. He's okay. Decent recruiter, I guess. I don't know that he helps Georgia a ton. They're already recruiting really well. It is a weird look for Florida to lose him, just like it was a weird look for Chaney to say, yeah, I'm leaving Georgia. Peace. Going back to Knoxville. But, yeah, that's not exactly a, wow, look at what Georgia did type of hire. Same thing with Coley, promoting him to OC. That's not a, wow, look what Georgia did type of hire. Tennessee right now winning kind of the offseason a little bit when it comes to coaching changes. And then we'll see, obviously, in recruiting, they got to catch up. They got to catch Florida. They got to catch Georgia on the recruiting trail if they want to be able to truly compete. But when you're stacking a staff like this and you're still recruiting at a pretty high level, seems like the momentum is building and trending in the right direction for Jeremy Pruitt as he enters year two as the head man at Tennessee. Spring practice going to be very, very interesting, as are the next couple of weeks as they finish up in recruiting. But that introduction for T was incredible. I knew it would be good. It always is when you get new coaches.
Yeah.
But, man, the extra energy because it was T. Martin, and you could play a video of him throwing a touchdown to win a national championship. Took the lid off the place.
Well,
you wondered
if he would maybe never come back. You know, after it seemed like there were some chances.
Yeah.
And sometimes you feel like maybe that ship has sailed. But I think that is, and as you mentioned, a sign of what you hope for Tennessee is that the old, at least the old guard theme of Tennessee mm-hmm. being run by people that ultimately have been made by the place and now want to work for the place that they've been a part of. That's as he called it, home, and just a piece of their heart is here, and that you get that little bit extra. I don't know if effort's the right word, because I do feel like people can work really hard at a place that they don't have a tie to, but there's just a little bit of an extra emotional connection
mm-hmm.
when you work at a place that means more to you than just your job, your current point of employment and profession. So it was really a special moment, and then just kind of capped off by surviving and winning the game and beating Alabama. And now we wait for lunch today to see if Tennessee has ascended to the top of the national spotlight in terms of the basketball rankings. We'll come back. Final segment of the program. Stick with us right here. It's Fan Run Radio. Green light, girl, In SEC basketball news, Florida's forward Keith Stone tore his ACL against Georgia over the weekend. He averaged over 6 points and right at 4 rebounds. He started 13 out of their 17 games.
Ooh.
So you're right, Houston, a quality reserve slash pseudo starter. Yeah.
Smooth.
I didn't realize he had started that many.
So that's Keith Stone. He's out for the year. We talked earlier in the program about who would, you know, challenge Tennessee for the regular season SEC title. You know, it's probably got to be Auburn, Kentucky,
LSU, Ole Miss.
Yeah.
Right now, those are your four. Two unexpected and two that you kind of thought would be there the whole time.
Yeah. So that's kind of where we are with basketball.
How do they fix the second half letdown?
Not be up so much in the first half?
Interesting.
Do you think Barnes should have taken a timeout sooner when they had that run? Because I had a friend who said, no, he shouldn't have even taken a timeout when he did after they went on a 16-0 run, which I completely disagreed with. He's like, just let him figure it out. I was like, no, you call it. I mean,
when he took it, after the basket went in, I was like, you got to have a timeout now. And he called it.
You don't think they should have had one sooner?
I mean, I didn't at the time. But then it kind of kept going, and once it hit that point, it was like, okay, now they have the lead. Now you call the timeout. I mean, I guess you could have called it earlier, but I didn't have, like, a huge issue with when he took it.
I mean,
or that he delayed to take it.
I do think this is interesting, just staying on SEC basketball. There's a site I kind of keep up with that goes through a lot of analytics, but it's teamrankings.com. Right now, Tennessee has a 55.5% chance to make the SEC championship game and a 36.48% chance to win it.
Interesting. I'd say those are easily the highest in the conference,
yes.
Right?
Yes. The next highest to win it is Auburn at 19.82%.
Doubling them up. That's not bad.
Just a lot of possibilities.
Sure. So wait. So don't be up. Don't play as well in the first half. Don't let them sit down at halftime.
Well,
just immediate layup lines?
It was defensively against Arkansas where Tennessee kind of let up.
It was defensively also against Alabama, but there was also offense.
And then the offense, I think, was maybe more of the problem against Alabama. I mean, if Petty doesn't go crazy, if he misses a quarter of those shots he makes, it might not feel the same way on defense against Alabama. But, I mean, you got to think back. So even last year with this team, they were super inconsistent in games. I mean, they would be way up. They would give up. They'd come out and play poorly to start or start the second half or whatever. Like, they are much more consistent this year. So I know we're starting to get pickier and pickier as we go through the season, and that's okay. But just you have to have some perspective. I mean, teams do this. It's not like this is a problem every game, or it's not like it's always the same thing. So you'd rather
no,
be able
it's
to
just,
work
it's
on
just
these
two
things
in a row.
As you go.
It's just two in a row, and I mean that's not exactly a super trend. You know, Florida obviously they closed with a fury. Missouri was great. Georgia was a joke from the tip. And you're right, like they haven't had a lot of those types of games this year. I mean, they did give up 57 to Memphis in the second half after giving up 35 in the first. But they were also able to pace with 52 themselves. Same with Arkansas. You gave up a lot to Arkansas. And you also scored a lot to keep up with what Arkansas was doing. The question is, what happens on nights when you let down a little bit defensively and the offense doesn't match? And that's what happened against Alabama. You were still able to hang on. Obviously, that's great to survive. I'm just wondering if there something you can do? I mean, is this adjustments? Is this team starting to, I don't want to say figure Tennessee out, but are teams figuring out at least ways to slow and adjust to what Tennessee's doing? Or did Tennessee just have a bad night shooting and everything else wasn't as bad as it looked in the second half, obviously?
I think more the latter. Somebody was pointing out how athletic Alabama has been the last few years, and that's why Tennessee
they were super fast.
Has more trouble with them than some other teams.
And I think I agree with that. It's a really big part of it. Like, I give Alabama a lot of credit.
I think Arkansas was more of a letdown. I think Alabama was a little more about what Alabama was able to do.
I agree. Well, I think Alabama, as you just said, I mean, their athleticism and speed and then height on the inside gave Tennessee trouble and that, you know, you had Petty dropping 20 in the second half, but Tennessee only scored 27 in the second half. That's got to be their lowest output in a half this season, right? Has to be.
Yeah.
So, and you were at home. Maybe it's a little bit of everything. Maybe it's Alabama mixed in with a little bit of the pressure of, hey, you could move to number one, and you played so well in the first half that you didn't think the second half was going to be that big of a deal. But then when they scored 16 straight, it's not like Tennessee immediately snapped out of it and started playing great on offense. Mm-hmm. I mean, they still only scored 27 the rest of the way. Are you worried about that at all? Like, level 1 through 10, is that like a 2?
Not any more than I was before. I mean, okay.
No, I was just curious. I'm not, like, shaking in my boots. I'm just – it is two games. Well, more than that, but two in a row now where the second half, you've kind of
– when they run bad offense – stumbled. When they run bad offense, a lot of times Admiral can bail him out because he can get his shot from anywhere. But if he's not making his shot – and Lamonte's done the same thing, too, at key points over last year's run – I mean, if they're missing those shots, then this is just the way it's going to be. So the trick is not to have them make those shots. The trick is to run better offense. So when they shoot, they're open. And when everyone else is shooting, they're in better positions to score. I do worry a lot of times in tournament basketball, you end up in these situations where you need to just be able to run a ball screen with your best player with the basketball. And Tennessee's best scorers aren't guys that can do that. You can't just let your best scorer bring the ball up the court or hold the ball late and set a ball screen and get perfect offense. To do that, you have to have the ball in Bone's hand, and he can create a shot for somebody else that's your better scorers, or he can shoot, but is that the option you want to go with? See, Tennessee said the other day they would rather get the ball to Grant at the free throw line, which is fine, but that's just harder to do on a consistent basis than just be able to dribble out high till there's 10 seconds on the shot clock and then come set a ball screen and go.
What, do they need to change that then? Like, should that be Bowden? Does Bowden need to be getting more shots?
No, I don't
think in the half court?
I think they're just going to have to work harder to run real sets in crunch time, which is just a little more difficult to do than teams that are built with an NBA guy.
I'm not even talking about crunch time. Like, Bowden went 5 of 7. Like, I want him to get more shots, period. Schofield 4 of 17.
I mean, they just need to move more and take better shots, and then the ball end up in Bowden's hands probably for shots like that more. Talk Sports is next. Sure, they'll talk a lot of Tennessee basketball, NFL football, and more. It's Ben Lee, John Reed, Cody McClure. Don't forget, Voluntary Reaction comes up after UT basketball games right here on Fan Run Radio. For us, we'll talk to you tomorrow.
Where are the polls?
Let's be number one.